Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is a Marvel Chronology episode. We're still on Secret Wars 2. This episode's going to be about the tie-ins for issue 6. We're getting down toward the end. And I don't know, I have to say that as much kind of fun and over-the-topness that Secret Wars 2 has, I'm ready to be done with it. It's kind of starting to
get
a little old now.
I'm sorry. I want to take back everything positive I said about it last time we talked.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, you know, it's kind of an interesting character study. It's like they've been studying the character for 7 issues plus.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, wait a second. We talk about issue 7. But.
And I think if they took some of the moments from some of the crossovers and incorporated them into the regular book and didn't have all the crossover stuff, then it wouldn't be so bad, you know. But when you have the regular issue and then you have 4 issues that tie into it, it just starts to be a lot. And if you think of it as all one story, you know, say it's an average of 4, we'll even give them a break and say it's an average of 3 crossovers per issue. So 9 issues plus 3 crossovers, that's, you know, 4 issues per month times 9, that's 36 issues. That's 3 years worth of a regular monthly comic. You would expect a story to move along. You would expect character growth in that many issues. And with the Beyonder, we're still getting, you know, the same old same. So let's dive into the issues. I don't, you know, being that we've gotten this far and not much has changed, I don't know that we're going to be getting too in-depth, but we'll see. We'll see how much we have to say. So we're going to start with Power Man and Iron Fist 121. It's from Jim Owsley on the script, which is actually Christopher Priest. That's the pen name he used early on. The pencils are by Mark Bright. The inks are by Jerry Aserno. And the colors are by Janet Jackson. Not that Janet Jackson, but a different,
no.
different Janet Jackson. I will say, just talking briefly about the art, I do enjoy the art. You know, Mark Bright is a really classic penciler, and he's got a very recognizable style. That being said, I don't know that I've ever seen him work with Aserno before. The inks aren't really doing him any favors here, but it's still recognizable as Mark Bright. But another thing that's interesting is I'm not sure why Iron Fist has a red and yellow costume instead of the classic green and yellow that we have always seen him in. I mean, even when
I didn't even notice it.
Even when he was just in Secret Wars 2, when he crossed over with like issue 2, he had the green and white. So I don't know if it got colored incorrectly or something happened. Anyway, the series opens up. We're introduced to a new hero, somebody called Captain Hero. It's actually a 12-year-old boy named Bobby Wright, who apparently gained some powers in a previous issue of Power Man and Iron Fist through some interaction with some kind of alien, but it's killing him, and he finds out about it, and he kind of flees the installation that he's at where they're trying to cure him, and goes looking for Power Man and Iron Fist to kind of help him. Meanwhile,
I like that he's basically Shazam.
I don't know. Like, he's
in many ways he kind of is.
Yeah, I mean, being that it's a little boy, he can manipulate his molecular structure, turns himself into this grown-up hero. But I mean, he can also turn invisible. He can phase through objects. He can manipulate his own molecules, not the molecules of anybody else. So he's not, you know, as powerful as Molecule Man, but still pretty powerful guy. So meanwhile,
it's funny. Marvel had to take Captain Marvel back, and then they're like, and then let's make a character who's kind of a parody of Shazam, only more powerful.
Yeah, more powerful, and we'll give him the very unique name of Captain Hero of all.
And his name is Billy or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Bobby, which is close to Billy Bastion. Yeah,
exactly.
It's definitely intentional. Bobby, right. Anyway.
So meanwhile, Power Man and Iron Fist show up, and they're like at their building, and they're, you know, it's gone. Where is it? I guess that dream we had of the Beyonder turning our office into gold, it was a dream, right? Apparently it wasn't. So while they're standing out on the sidewalk trying to figure out what to do, Falcon shows up and he tells them that he heard about Bobby, Captain Hero. He took off from Project Pegasus, and S.H.I.E.L.D.'s out looking for him. And while they're trying to decide what to do, the Beyonder shows up, because, of course, why not? And Iron Fist is like, the Beyonder, where have you been? Luke and I were becoming concerned. Beyonder's like, really? I'm flattered, but you shouldn't have worried yourself. I was off building something great. And Falcon's like, who's this? And Luke Cage is like, long story. Beyonder says, come on, I'll show you. And he transports them out to the North Atlantic. There's this giant headquarters that the Beyonder has built that has a bunch of TV monitors, screen monitors that have 25 people on each monitor, and they are 26,000 rows wide and 6,000 screens high. So it's 160 million monitor screens with 25 people on each monitor screen. So it's 4 billion people on camera. It's literally enough for, at that time, every person on Earth. And the Beyonder's like, great idea, right? And Iron Fist is pretty impressed. He's like, amazing. Falcon thinks it's dangerous. And Luke Cage says, I'm hungry. So the Beyonder's like, all right, well, just wanted see it. So you must be tired from your sudden return from Kun Lun. Let's get back to New York. And he transports them back. And the three heroes are talking. Falcon says, that Beyonder's a strange cat. And Iron Fist is like, I disagree. I find him intriguing. Meanwhile, Falcon's like, well, we really need to get out there and look for Bobby Wright. So, plus, we probably should talk to S.H.I.E.L.D. about the Beyonder, because, you know, that much power, I don't care how benevolent you are, it can be perverted for evil. So I'm going to call Nick Fury, Chief of S.H.I.E.L.D. He'll know what to do. So Iron Fist is like, I'll go with you. I wish to speak to Fury on the Beyonder's behalf. And Falcon says, all right, Cage, it's up to you to distract the Beyonder for a while. He's like, me? Ah, Christmas. So the Beyonder shows back up, says, sorry, I left you. I saw a plane in trouble over the south of France. I had to help. He's like, no problem, man. You got to learn how to relax and unwind. Here, let me take you to find some food. So meanwhile, in the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, Falcon and Iron Fist talk to Nick Fury about what they might want to do. And they decide, all right, well, let's set some charges and blow this big brother platform of the North Atlantic sky high, which seems kind of arbitrary. I mean, I know that the Beyonder's a pretty powerful guy, but it's like he hasn't necessarily done anything wrong. Somebody that powerful, I'm not real sure why you would want to provoke him. But anyway, that's what they decide to do. And Iron Fist is he's not a fan, but he's going to accompany them to kind of keep an eye. Elsewhere at Sweet George's Cafe, there are plenty of African-American guys looking at the Beyonder sideways because he kind of talks funny, especially compared to them. And obviously he's a white guy, whereas everybody else in in Sweet George's is African-American. And so when the Beyonder notices people laughing at him, he asks Luke Cage, why are those men laughing at me? Did I say something funny? And Luke Cage says, it's not what you said, it's the face that said it. He goes, oh, you because the color of my skin? Will this make a difference? And he transforms himself into an African-American guy with an afro. And the other guys aren't real happy about that. They're like, ah, he's making fun of us. He thinks we're a joke. Well, I got a joke from all right. And they walk over there and, yo, man, you think you funny? And the Beyonder starts talking like a jive talk. Real bad, real bad. Like, yo, why you coming out your neck? Because me and my cuz is just greasing down. What's up with the gangsta action?
And the translations at the bottom.
Yeah, their translations are
pretty, oh my God.
Yeah, pretty. Yeah, this is not exactly a PC comic. Yeah,
he does look way cooler
yeah.
now than he does with the stupid hair when he's a white guy.
The Michael Jackson hair? Yeah.
So yeah.
The Beyonder basically gets punched out. And Luke Cage is like, hey, you didn't have to hit him. We just wanted some dinner. And ends up getting in a fight. And between him and the Beyonder, they pretty much wipe the floor with everybody. And then Captain Hero shows up. Hiya, Luke. What's shaking? Bobby, Captain Hero, what are you doing here? Half a S.H.I.E.L.D.'s out looking for you. I'm looking for my pal Iron Fist. You're looking for Iron Fist? I'm from beyond. I come from beyond to your small planet to comprehend your species' strange desires. He's like, okay. And the Beyonder transports him out. I'll give you a hand. Transports him out to the platform on the Atlantic, where the SHIELD agents have set all the bombs. And Captain Hero appears and grabs Iron Fist. He's like, "Ah, I'm so glad to hear you. Bobby, how'd you find me?" "Well, the Beyonder sent me." And Iron Fist says, "Uh-oh, that means he's aware of our presence. That can't be good." And then Iron Fist asks why he left Project Pegasus. And he said, "I got tired of being lied to. They're leading me on, thinking they can have a cure when all along they know I was going to die. They said lying to me was for my own good, but it was what they had to do. But, I can handle even though I'm a kid, I can handle the truth. It's pretty skeevy lying to somebody you're pretending to be friends with." And then Iron Fist runs off and Bobby's like, "Wait, where are you going?" He's like, and Iron Fist says, "To right a grievous wrong." And he says, "We're lying to the Beyonder in the name of common good, but who's to say the Beyonder will use the station for evil? We need to stop." And SHIELD's like, "Nope, we're not going to stop it. Take care of Iron Fist while we finish the job. We got to follow our orders." So, Iron Fist, being the excellent fighter he is, manages to take out all of the SHIELD agents without any of them even being able to touch him. And meanwhile, on the helicarrier, the agents that were watching are like, "I gotta save the mission, even if it means taking out one or two of her own," and he launches missiles. And Nick Fury's like, What are you doing? Those missiles won't just tear chunks out of the platform. They'll set off all the charges that we set, and the whole thing's gonna blow up." And so we see three missiles heading toward the platform. Bobby notices them. "Golly, are those missiles?" So he flies up as Captain Hero, and he manages to take out two of the missiles, but the third one slips past him, and he knows he won't be able to grab it in time. And meanwhile, Iron Fist has taken out the last of the SHIELD agents, and he knows what he has to do. He turns one of his fists into iron and literally punches the missile, and it explodes, and everybody figures he's dead, but somehow he's alive. He says, "I'm alive? How? Oh, I should have guessed." There's the Beyonder with Luke Cage in tow in a bubble and saying, I knew what you guys were up to all along. I just don't understand it. But let me show you something. Let's say the explosive charges that you installed went off. It'd be a big explosion. The platform would be completely obliterated." And he shows them by blowing up the platform. But he says, "Don't worry. I'm sealing all of you in protective stasis spheres. You're perfectly safe." So here it is. The whole thing is blown up. "There's nothing I don't know. There's so much I don't comprehend. There's nothing that I fear. You fear what you don't understand. And there are those that try to overcome fear, but you hold your own heroes in contempt. And, I don't understand it. You people are really paranoid. I meant you no harm, but you blew up my station. And that's a waste of time because," and he waves his hands, and the platform's completely restored. And he says, "Yeah, but you'll only blow it up again. And I could, of course, make a career out of rebuilding it, but your collective paranoia over myself, and it would probably escalate into World War. So I'll just get rid of it." And Luke Cage is like, "Paranoid? You think he's talking about us?" And again, the Beyonder said, "Is there nothing I can do to end the incompleteness that chokes this world? Nothing I can do to help? What a paranoid species." And he disappears. And later that night, we see Iron Fist on the phone with Bobby Wright telling him he must stay in the hospital so they can try to find a cure. And Bobby agrees, even though he isn't really happy about it. And then the issue ends with Iron Fist trying to contact Misty Knight, who has apparently a new boyfriend, unbeknownst to Iron Fist, that shows up. And Iron Fist can't get through. He eventually hangs up, and then he's got some girl named Max at his door, apparently selling Girl Scout cookies. He appears to know her, and I think she's joking about the cookies, to be honest. But that's the end of the issue, so not really sure what's going on there. Haven't read Power Man and Iron Fist. Was never a big fan of the series. So as far as the way this ties into Secret Wars, I don't know. Again, super inconsistent, super up and down. The Beyonder, it seems like they got him to a certain point, and then I don't know if Shooter didn't like have it all planned out what he was going to do, if he's trying to do it organically, but especially in the tie-in issues, when we get to these later ones, his amount of knowledge and the way he interacts with the heroes is wildly inconsistent. Like here, he seems pretty knowledgeable, pretty benevolent. He's definitely patient with SHIELD and Power Man and Iron Fist, you know, blowing up his platform and everything. But then when you see what he's doing in Thor and Power Pack, it's inconsistent, especially when you start adding in Cloak and Dagger 4. So, yeah, it's another part of the reason that this series isn't considered very good. And what kind of makes it tedious when you get toward the end. Because, again, I think partly this is due to the fact that this was one of the first series that was ever done like this with all these tie-ins. So I doubt that the writers of the tie-ins were, you know, attending the editorial meetings for the main series, if there even were any editorial meetings. You know, Jim Shooter was editor-in-chief. He might have just been going like, okay, here's my scripts. You can read them and find out what's going on in the regular issues and then just write your own monthly title, put Beyonder in it.
Yeah, that's definitely what it feels like. Yeah, it seems like issues you read are in the wrong place with tie-ins. Like this should tie into 4 when Beyonder's in this mood or whatever. And it's not very well organized.
No, not at all.
Even like the drawings of him, like, yeah, each artist has their style, but he looks like a completely different character sometimes.
Yeah, it's really strange. So the next two I'm going to go through really quickly back to back, and then we'll talk about it, because more than any other two tie-ins, these two tie-in the most closely together. And I think, yeah, so Power Pack 18 is first. Again, I know next to nothing about Power Pack. Didn't read it back then. Can't believe it lasted as long as it did. What I know is it's a group of kids that get superpowers because they meet some alien or something. And to be honest, it's really not very good. It's very much of its time, but it's a lot of siblings bickering back and forth from what I know. And again, it's not, I mean, maybe that's realistic. I can certainly remember bickering with my brothers and sisters, but it's not very fun to read. I don't need to be reading that. So anyway, it's by Louis Simonson. We've got pencils by Brett Anderson and Scott Williams. Inks by Bob Wyachek and colors by Louise Simonson, which is interesting. She writes the book and colors the book. So,
And I usually have an opinion about art, but I really don't like the colors in this book.
The colors? Yeah, everything's
really so yellow. Yeah. And then bright reds and bright greens once in a while, but otherwise so yellow.
Yeah, very much so. And her husband did the cover, Walt Simonson, who's a legend. So that's cool, at least. Anyway, we see Curse. That's the name of the issue. Finally, in New York, he was previously Al Grimm, the elf that the Beyonder had given a bunch of power to. Has a serious hate on for Thor, so he's a one track mind. You know, that's all he's like. Give me Thor, Thor, give me Thor. So he's rampaging through New York. People are trying to stop him. We get some flashbacks of the Beyonder giving him power because. This was like back in issue 3 or 4 when the Beyonder was like, almost everybody on Earth has kind of the same level as of desire, but there's certain people like this Curse or Al Grimm the Elf character or being who seems to have more of a greater level of desire and focused on one particular thing. So let me bestow some of my power on him and see. And see what happens, basically. So that's what he does. So Al Grimm the Elf has literally walked across the ocean floor to get to New York, and he's looking for Thor. Meanwhile, Franklin Richards, who's also a member of Power Pack, dreams about him and is going to go out and try to warn Thor and the guy from beyond about how dangerous Curse is. But during this period of time, you know, with the Baxter Building having been stolen or destroyed or flown off into space or something, Fantastic Four still staying with the Avengers, and Jarvis sees Franklin Richards trying to leave the mansion, thinks he's sleepwalking, picks him up, puts him back to bed. So meanwhile, we see Power Pack being late for school, and they use their powers. They fly down from the building. They're heading to school, and across town, their mother is picking up some poster board for one of them for one of his science projects. And as she leaves the store, she gets backhanded by Curse, and she's hurt very badly. The Beyonder shows up with some really crazy eyebrows we've never seen on him before. And instead of just like, again,
that was going to be my other question. So he's healed people before.
Yeah, he's healed people all the time. But instead of healing her, he's like,
oh, hospital?
Put her on this, yeah, let me put her on this floating mattress and take her to the hospital. Like, dude, you've practically, I mean, in tie-ins this same month in Cloak and Dagger, we're going to see him like disintegrate and reintegrate people. And he transports her to the hospital. Just heal her. Like, what's the big deal?
Yeah, he doesn't even, like, flash her to the hospital either.
No!
He flies her like he's Superman or something. He's yeah, it's stupid.
It's ridiculous. And then, after he flies her to the hospital, he goes and tracks down Power Pack and says, oh, by the way, the rampaging supervillain called Curse hurt your mother, doesn't mention that he's behind Curse, and the kids are obviously worried. He's like, climb on this platform, I'll take you to the hospital. Again, instead of just transporting them in a blink of an eye, he sees how upset they are. You know, supposedly he has empathy and understanding now. Shouldn't he be like, oh, yes, let me heal your mother, especially since I'm the one responsible for Curse who hurt her? But instead, he takes the kids to the hospital. They see their dad there, and their dad's not even, like, surprised about this Beyonder or the kids, like, appearing on this platform, whatever. The Beyonder flies off. Ah, hi, I'm Superman. I'm the Beyonder. I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. And so the family's there. They're crying over the mother. And then Nurse Ratchet shows up and kicks them all out. Like, hey, these kids can't be. She's on death's door. Leave the kids alone. They're fine. Let them be with her mother as long as she's drawing breath. Like, what's. Get out of here. You need to be escorted out immediately. Blah, blah, blah. This poor woman's at death's door. Yeah, that's the point, lady. Like, what the heck's wrong with you? So the oldest Power Pack child's blaming himself. He's like, if I was more on top of it, then I would have gone to get my own poster board and mom never would have been there and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I'll buy this from little kids that they don't have logic. I'm not buying it from the Beyonder. So anyway, they're out. Now they're out for revenge, turn into their Power Pack outfits. They fly around. They look for Curse. They find him at a construction site. There's a pitched battle, and eventually they trap him under a partially constructed building by collapsing all the iron girders on top of him because they hear him say something about being an elf. And one of the Power Pack children reads a lot of fantasy novels and knows that iron is a weakness that elves have, because that's a thing, apparently. And so the building collapses on them, and the foreman from the construction site is kind of yelling at them. Hey, you punks, you almost killed me, blah, blah, blah. They're like, hey, we just stopped this guy from rampaging across the city, and you know, you should be grateful. And meanwhile, they finally get back home. They have dinner with their dad, and he's all upset because their mother's still unconscious. He wants to be near her while he can. The doctors think she might wake up, but he has his doubts, and they're probably even going to have to spend Thanksgiving at the hospital. So you guys clean up. I have to go back to the hospital, and leaves all his kids there alone in New York City in their apartment, I guess, or brownstone or whatever it is. To fend for themselves, which also was a thing in the 80s. And then the story moves on to Franklin Richards again. He's again dreaming about Curse, who apparently is not killed by all the iron and is digging himself out. And of course, Franklin is seeing all this in his special type of dreams, which are actually him seeing events of the near future. So, again, this plays directly into Thor 363, which is the next tie-in. And
I don't know. Power Pack seems like an effed up book. Like, it's effed up even more by the Beyonder.
Yeah.
It's already a strange book.
Yeah. It ran for a lot of issues, but I never read it, and I was surprised that it ever lasted. It's one of those books that you're just like, really? This is still going for 2 years? Who the heck was reading this?
Well, now I'm surprised it's not like a Disney Channel thing or something.
Yeah,
really, preschool Marvel.
But I in fairness, I mean, like I said, it was Louise Simonson that did it, and that's probably why it tied in so closely with Thor, because at this time Thor is being written and drawn by Walter Simonson. So we've got Walter Simonson on art and story for Thor 363, and Max Scheel on colors. So it starts off. We get a recap of basically what happened in Power Pack 18,
with the most Clark Kent looking Beyonder ever, but he's still the Beyonder.
Yeah, no pupils.
I pause for a second.
Very classic Walt Simonson looking art in this for sure, which most people seem to really enjoy Walter Simonson's art. His art is very dynamic. It's very angular. I tend to enjoy his art. It's relatively clean lines, but the one thing he does leave pupils out quite often, if at all able to, or we just get a little dot for pupils. That's the only thing. So anyway, Thor is returning to Earth after many months or away. A few months anyway. Issues 360 to 362, where he was fighting. Who's the guy? Malekith the Accursed, who was stealing mortal souls.
And who they use in the movies.
And Thor, while he was fighting Hela, has a bunch of scars on it, got a bunch of scars on his face. So he's wearing a kind of a bandana to kind of hide the scars. And he eventually grows a beard to hide some of the scars. So meanwhile, Curse has dug himself out of the iron and he's rampaging across the city once more. And we see Power Pack flying around. And they're going to look for Franklin. And as they're doing that, they happen across Beta Ray Bill. But Beta Ray Bill is in his normal guise. He's not in his Beta Ray Bill guise. And he talks about having fought Curse, and the only way he was able to escape was by turning into a civilian identity, and then he didn't look like Thor anymore. And Curse left him alone. And they say, oh, yeah, Curse, we fought that guy tonight. We dumped a building on his head, and now he's dead. And Beta Ray Bill's like, probably not, because I doubt even Thor and I together could withstand him. So they go out looking for him. Meanwhile, the Beyonder is on his platform again. So I guess technically these issues take place before Power Man and Iron Fist, because the platform still exists. So he's watching on the monitors as Curse finally finds Thor, and they start fighting. And so this is kind of the accumulation of what the Beyonder's been looking for all along. Like, I'm going to give Curse all this portion of my power and make him super powerful and see if he can fulfill his heart's desire, and what happens when a being does have his heart's desire fulfilled. Again, it's wildly inconsistent. It made sense when the Beyonder did it, but it doesn't make sense now with what he's learned with... Because we've had the emo Beyonder in issue 4, and then we had the love Beyonder, the love issue in issue 4, and then the emo Beyonder in issue 6, and then the I'm going to be a hero. No, we got the love issue in 4, we got the emo in 5, and we got the hero Beyonder in 6. That's how it played out. So with everything he learned in those three issues, you would think, okay, I'm not going to let this raging, rampaging killing machine that only desires one thing in life, and that's to kill Thor. I'm not going to allow him to continue to exist, and I'm especially not going to be the one that powers him, because I know that all those things are bad. We have seen the Beyonder grow so far in the series. So for this to be happening now, it just doesn't make sense. If this had tied in way back then, yeah, it would make sense. But anyway, Curse is die, Thor, die. And he's beating the crap out of him, and Thor goes to his chariot that he had been using to return to Earth after fighting Malekith the Accursed, and gets a strength belt. So now he's the equal of Curse, and the Beyonder is now on site watching in person, and he says, how interesting, Thor found a way to neutralize his foe's greater strength. So is that enough for the Beyonder to end this experiment? No! I much rather would give Curse even more power. So that's what he does. He gives him even more power. Now let's see what Thor does when he's, again, hopelessly outmatched. But what eventually impresses the Beyonder is that no matter how overmatched Thor is, he doesn't give up. Thor's will to live, so nearly extinguished, is rekindled when Power Pack shows up. Because he remembers why he fights for Earth, right? Like, as much as he's a hero and he's trying to hold his own, he does get to the point where he's so overmatched, he feels like maybe I should give up. But once he sees Power Pack show up, he's like, no, I must keep fighting. I must keep resisting. And the Beyonder thinks, but why? I can read in his mind that he has never even met these children before, but there's a feeling of family between them. So again, they keep fighting. Beta Ray Bill shows up, adds his abilities to the fight. And then Kerr starts seeing these visions, right? He sees some of the members of Power Pack as Malkeith the Accursed, and that finally gets through to him. It finally redirects his single-minded pursuit of Thor to Malkeith. He's the one I blame. Not Thor at all, but Malkeith. I remember now. I shall find you, Malkeith. I shall find you and wring the life from you, drop by drop, for what you did to me. So he heads off. And Thor and Beta Ray Bill and Power Pack just let him go. They're like, don't really know that we can stop him. So they decide to come up with a plan. If they channel all the power of their two hammers, both Beta Ray Bill's hammer, which I think is called Warbringer, and Thor's hammer, Mjolnir, and we charge it up with the power of the tiniest little member of Power Pack, who can apparently like absorb all this energy from the stars. So she does that. She absorbs until she can stand no more. And then Thor literally lifts her up and fires her energy out of her little body to curse. And finally, he's vanquished. And the Beyonder then shows up and says, huh, you defeated him. If curse troubles you, let me just pop him back into Fairyland. And Thor's like, but what is it? Does it that mean he'll die again? Beyonder says, eh, probably. There isn't much of him left when I got a hold of him the first time. And Thor says, then why not let him live to serve a useful purpose? And the Beyonder says, what do you have in mind? Again, this makes no sense at all. Here's this living being of destruction that the Beyonder created. He still hasn't mentioned to Power Pack that he's the one, he's behind curse and indirectly responsible for what happened to his mom. But Thor's smart enough to know, I mean, he couldn't defeat him on his own. He had to get the help of Power Pack and Beta Ray Bill. Take your power back and let Algrim the Elf, like, pass on from the mortal coil like he was about to. Because, you know, sooner or later, it's gonna come back around and you're gonna have to deal with him again. But instead, Thor says, curse seeks to find the one who destroyed him. Send him to hell. Let him deal with Malkeith. Why should Malkeith not come face to face with his own creation? But again, the Beyonder's like, no, I am the one that created him. But he doesn't say that. So he agrees. He sends him. And the Beyonder does say, with a little peep into your mind that will satisfy the curiosity, oh, I see, you think that curse will make life interesting for the death goddess Hela, who injured your face so badly. I like that, though I don't quite know why. And Thor says, it's called irony, Beyonder. I suspect your life is filled with it. So meanwhile, the youngest member of Power Pack is telling the Beyonder how much she hates him. You were the one that made curse and curse hurt mommy. You're a bad man. I wish I could disintegrate you. And the Beyonder said, but then you would be just like curse and that wouldn't be any good, would it? Maybe doing good is what makes somebody a part of a family. So I guess the Beyonder doesn't want to be part of a family because he still, even at this point when he has the opportunity, doesn't just snap his fingers and heal their mother. Says, that may be just what I'm looking for because all the power in the universe can't make you good. You have to choose it. Yeah, so choose it, Beyonder, heal their mother. But no, he says, in the future, I shall choose to be good, but I can't choose it for everybody. But Power Pack and Bill, you have the right idea. Thor, no sacrifice will be too great. I want to show my appreciation for what you've learned today. That's the family way, right? I don't want to touch your face, Thor, because I like what you said about irony. And if it were fixed, sending curse to hell wouldn't be ironic. So instead, I have restored the hammer's power that the littlest member of Power Pack had absorbed all the energy from. I am off. Adios. Again, he says it right there. Let me thank you for the lesson you've taught me. Should I thank Thor by healing his scars? No, can't do that because that would mess up Walt Simonson's plans for future issues of Thor. And I guess I can't really heal the mother of the Power Pack children either because that would mess up Louise Simonson's plans for future issues of Power Pack. So instead, I'm just going to restore the power of these hammers, which probably wasn't necessary at all, because you guys probably just could have banged them on the ground and summoned lightning, and they would have got charged up all over again in the first place. So how about instead I'll do something completely meaningless to really show that these tie-ins to these Secret War issues really don't mean a pile of beans.
Well,
he doesn't actually say that, but you can kind of tell by the look on his face that's what he's thinking.
Well, the Beyonder learned a little bit of Spanish. He said adios. He did. And what's the name of Beta Ray Bill's hammer?
I think it's I want to say Warbringer or Stormbringer.
Stormbreaker, maybe?
Stormbreaker, that's it, yeah.
Okay, because they've used that in MCU eventually. So I was wondering if you meant the same hammer or if it was a different hammer.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think it is Stormbreaker.
Because Stormbreaker is a name I've heard before recently.
Yeah, definitely. So the three team member, well, Power Pack, Beta Ray Bill, and Thor all say their fond farewells. And then just to throw in a little twist right at the end, we see a woman run up to Thor and kiss him. A woman that we saw previously in the issue who had been targeted by Loki from afar by a spell. And she kisses Thor through the little, handkerchief or whatever he has on his face to hide the scars, and foof, he's been turned into a frog. And that's right. Next issue, Thor croaks the story they didn't think we had the nerve to tell. So that's a pretty famous issue of Thor where he's been turned into a frog. Never read it myself. I've never read this Simonson, run of Thor. It's one of the holes in my reading, 'cause it's definitely considered classic stuff. So yeah. I for all my kind of tongue-in-cheek complaining about these two, the stories are enjoyable. Like, yeah, I don't like the bickering of the Power Pack children. I don't like the way they bicker with each other. Yes, the Beyonder doesn't make any sense at this stage. It ties in with that inconsistency I was talking about. It makes no sense for him to not heal the child, not take away Curse's power when he sees the rampaging destruction. We've seen the Beyonder try to be a member of the Avengers and try to be a hero at this point. It just doesn't make any sense. But for all that, it is fun. The art is good. And it's of its time. And I did enjoy it. It just doesn't belong in this part of the narrative for the Beyonder's overall story, is what I'll say. So I'm not a fan of Power Pack. I am a fan of Walt Simonson's work. I will read that run of Thor eventually someday. And I actually like Curse as a character. I think he visually looks cool, and I love how powerful he is. But yeah, my biggest nitpick is it just doesn't make sense for where the Beyonder is at this point in his narrative for Curse to still exist. And what bothers me even more than that is the fact that the Beyonder just doesn't heal the mother. We've seen him feel guilty about stuff. We've seen him feel guilty about indirectly causing harm. And it just doesn't make sense for him not to go ahead and heal their mother. So what are your thoughts, Nick?
I mean, I agree. These two issues, I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's. I would say it's the most out of place we've ever seen the Beyonder in any of the books we've read so far. We're so far off basis. And I really liked your apt description of how things were kept as they were so that the writers could keep dealing with them.
That's all I can think, man.
That's really what it feels like.
Yeah, that's really all I can think. So, well, let's move on to the last tie-in for this issue. It's Cloak and Dagger number 4. It's written by Bill Mantlo, who actually is the creator of Cloak and Dagger. We've got pencils by the legendary Rick Leonardi, inks by the equally legendary Terry Austin, and colors by Petra Scotese.
Yeah, it's very 80s, but I very much like the art in this book.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, Leonardi's got a very distinctive style, very fine lines, very expressive art. And it starts off with Cloak and Dagger. They're at the church where they've found sanctuary since they've been, they've run away from home and gained their powers. And quick reminder or, information that you may not have is that Cloak and Dagger, the 4-issue limited series, it's Tandy Bowen and Tyrone Powers, I believe his last name is. They're runaways. They get kidnapped. They get, enhanced by this, evil corporation that's trying to kind of build super soldier kind of guys. But the, they get enhanced through drugs. I think the, company might have been like a pharmacological company, but the whole thing of Cloak and Dagger is drugs. You know, this was the 1980s, Nancy Reagan, just say no kind of thing. And so, their whole thing was like going against drug dealers. So this whole issue is all about drugs, basically. Because that's what Cloak and Dagger were about. They were about trying to stop people that were dealing drugs. So we see some cops, after the initial back and forth with the priest that's giving Cloak and Dagger sanctuary, which kind of reads kind of weird too. Cause he doesn't agree with kind of Cloak and Dagger's philosophical, take on, how they're using their powers and punishing, you know, punishment. He believes only God should punish, and he sees Tandy Bowen and her light powers as an angel. He sees Cloak and his darkness powers as a demon. And he's pretty harsh with his words to the point where Cloak's like ready to bail and go somewhere else. And then he apologizes. He's like, no, 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 please. You're right. And thinks to himself, I must minister to their physical needs. Get them to stay while I seek a way to reach their souls, or at least discover the means to deliver Dagger from the satanic influence of his cloak. So I don't know. It's so weird. And especially when you, read it now, like the way he interacts with Dagger, you know, and knowing all the scandals of the Catholic Church over the last, you know, 25, 30 years, you're like, does this dude have some like ulterior motives for this young teenage girl that, you know, has this skimpy skin tight costume on? I'm sure that's not at all what Mantlo intended, but it's again, with all that perspective of time and, you know, knowing things that went on in the church and everything, this being of the 80s and the scandals and everything, it just reads a little strange. So anyway, the scene shifts. We see some cops who, again, also of its time, one of the cops is like pistol whipping this guy on the docks to try to get information about the drug shipment that he received. And then the scene shifts to the Beyonder. The hours between dusk and dawn. It's not the safest for strolling through New York's Lower East Side. Perhaps not even for a being from beyond. And he's walking around. The buildings are boarded up. Windows are broken. I mean, honestly, I don't even think there are neighborhoods of New York that look this bad anymore. But it's pretty interesting. Again, a little bit of its time. And Beyonder thinks to himself, why would any segments of humanity live in such squalor? There must be a reason they dwell in such depressing surroundings amidst such decay. Can they find happiness here? And he eventually comes across a stoop where some guys are hanging around. And Cloak and Dagger are observing them because it's clearly some kind of a drug house. And they're wondering, well, this guy is dressed strangely. He's talking to himself. What's he doing in this slum? And when the Beyonder approaches the stoop, one of the guys says, hey, fancy pants, looking to score. Beyonder says, are you addressing me? You got it, Jack. My name isn't Jack. Suit yourself. We just thought you might be in the market for some happiness, which obviously a key word to tell the Beyonder. He says, yeah, of course I'm looking for happiness. I want to fulfill my desire. And, you know, they're talking about happiness that comes in a needle. The Beyonder obviously in his naivete doesn't realize this. So he does follow them inside, and Cloak and Dagger follow as well. And they're not even looking to mess around with the Beyonder. They're basically going to OD him because he looks like he has money, right? He's wearing these nice clothes and, you know, he has a certain glow about him. So they stick the needle in filled with heroin, shoot him up. Cloak and Dagger appear. They knock out all the guys. Dagger does what he does, or Cloak does what he does with his cloak and kind of absorbs them. And then The Beyonder gets upset. You have interfered. You have denied me that which I desire. You have yet to tell me why. Because he thought he was about to finally have happiness. And so he fights with Cloak and Dagger a little bit and takes away their powers because they interfered. And they're actually very, very happy because obviously they never asked for the powers. Those powers were given to them, as I mentioned, by that pharmacological company. And now they can finally feel normal again. They can go home again. And they're pretty happy about it, actually. And the Beyonder's like, well, wait a second. This was a punishment that he was giving them by taking away the powers. Why are they happy? It's not what he expected. And so then they start explaining what drugs are and how they weren't really giving him happiness. They were, you know, injecting him with drugs, probably to kill him. And the Beyonder starts to understand. And so he decides, let me let myself experience this quote unquote sweet stuff now. Because he had been injected with the heroin, and obviously being that he's not human, he wasn't affected by it. So he allows himself to be affected by it. He expands his senses out across the city to kind of experience what other people that use heroin experience. And he understands now the life's mission of Nancy Reagan to have people just say no. He understands the horror of drugs, and he snaps himself out of it. The being from beyond makes the madness stop. And Cloak says, "You got the picture, pal?" And Dagger says, "How'd you like to be hooked on that kind of happiness? That's the poison, the pushers you stopped us from punishing, peddle to kids on the streets." And the Beyonder says, "I'll show you what is to be done. I will punish them." And in the blink of an eye, he literally sends his power out across the city and disintegrates anyone who has anything to do with dealing drugs. And Cloak and Dagger are like, they're allowed to see the way that the Beyonder is solving the drug problem. And Cloak says, "I can't fathom that he's letting us see how he solves the problem. He's destroying all those in the immediate vicinity that are even involved in that." But Dagger's not happy. So he says he's not giving them any chance to redeem themselves. He's like a god gone mad. Is this right? Is this what we wanted to do with our powers? And the Beyonder says, "Yes, I'm judge, jury, and executioner. I've convicted, condemned, and now carry out sentence upon every individual engaged in the narcotics traffic in this urban area." And Cloak realizes, wow, this is what I must sound like to the priest. And even he has second thoughts. He's like, it's not right. Some of those slain might not have been evil. They might have been addicts themselves, or they dealt drugs because their environment taught them there's no other way to make a living. Dagger was right. There are degrees. You know, previously in the issue, Cloak was like, everything's black and white. If you deal with drugs, you're evil and we're going to punish you. He's like, I never made that distinction before, but I need to do so now. And Dagger says, yes, we punish in order to reform. And she says, Cloak, he's not listening. He's so sure that wholesale slaughter will solve the problem. And Cloak says, yes, he misconstrues our motives and our mission. He's taking both to ends that we never dreamed. I mean, it's easy to think that, you know, you want to destroy everybody that deals drugs or has anything to do with it when you don't have the power to actually do it, right? So they attempt to use their powers to stop the Beyonder. And he finally pays attention because Dagger is weeping. She's like, our souls will be charged with the deaths of those slain because we're the ones that explained to him what drugs were. And the Beyonder is surprised by that. He says, you weep for those whose lives are steeped in wickedness? Why? And Dagger says, well, because some of them are just people who've gone the wrong way. They should be saved, not slaughtered. That's what we should be doing with our powers. We should be offering the wicked a second chance. And the Beyonder says, yes, but aren't some of those so evil they deserve punishment? And Cloak says, yes, of course. But unless the punishment has some end beyond the affliction of pain and death, you can never make a man reform. If Cloak shows a person what'll happen to him if he continues down the path of darkness, maybe they'll choose the side of light. And the Beyonder's response is, so Cloak represents the darkness the despair man can feel should he commit a crime, and you represent the light of salvation. And Dagger says, well, I never thought about that, but yeah, that's a good way to put it. Killing anyone, even evil, makes us no better than those people that are pushing the drugs in the first place. And the Beyonder says, yes, I sought an ultimate solution. But perhaps in this world where death is immutable, those who died being evil, they got no chance for redemption. And he says, very well, I shall revoke my punishment. I shall give them back the chance to turn from darkness to light. And with a gesture, he reintegrates everyone. And the Cloak says, you brought the dead back to life? And the Beyonder says, no, I simply restored to existence those whose existences I had negated. And Dagger wants to know if he changed them. Beyonder says, no, I left them as I found them. I now leave the question of whether to punish those who dwell in the darkness or turn them to light to Cloak and Dagger, and he disappears. And so the problems of the world remain. We can debate whether or not that was a good thing. I mean, maybe it would have been better if he had just removed all the people, but it's not going to last, right? I mean, it's no different than a gang that comes in and eliminates the previous gang that was dealing drugs. Somebody is going to step in and fill the void. Unless you choose to eliminate all evil across the planet, which we saw him do previously when he enslaved the population. And that doesn't work because it leads to, it doesn't lead to happiness or contentment, from what the Beyonder learned. So again, he did learn an important lesson in this issue. Cloak and Dagger themselves learned an important lesson. The reason I wanted to talk about this one last is because, again, it's so clear that the Beyonder has such an understanding in some of these issues of these philosophical ideas, right? These higher moral questions, and that there are no easy answers. So when you contrast that with the way he's portrayed in Power Pack and Thor, again, you get that inconsistency. So this was a really good issue, and probably Mantlow, maybe more than anyone else, does a great job of using the Beyonder's character and having to integrate him into the story. He does a great job of integrating him into the growth of the characters of his book, right? Like Cloak and Dagger, after this issue, view their mission in a much different way because of their interaction with the Beyonder. So I feel like this is one of the better, more important crossovers of Secret Wars 2. But you do have to admit that Cloak and Dagger 4 still very much is of its time based on the heavy anti-drug, you would almost call this anti-drug propaganda issue. I mean, it's really like, don't do drugs. It is bad. I'm not saying it's not, but I don't think we're preached to quite this heavy-handedly anymore. So, but overall, I did enjoy this issue. The art, as Nick mentioned, is pretty spectacular. So any thoughts on Cloak and Dagger 4?
I mean, like Power Pack, it's just, it's not only, I mean, I've heard of the show, but like, I've never known anything about these characters. That's one thing I like about all these spinoffs is I'm learning. I've at least now read an issue of Cloak and Dagger and Power Pack. My world's expanding further, which is fun. I might look back at some of these titles later. So
yeah, which is in fairness, you know, as much as we could have complained a little bit this episode about these crossovers, that is the point of them, to introduce, you know, Marvel's hoping people will be introduced to these characters, and not only will they, you know, read the crossover, but then they will continue to pick up the title. Have you seen any of the Cloak and Dagger Freeform show?
No, as far as the TV shows go, I've only seen the Netflix stuff, and even not the last two seasons. I haven't really watched the ABC stuff or the Freeform stuff or the FX stuff.
Yeah.
So I need to. I will. Someday I'll watch everything Marvel. But
yeah, I haven't really heard anything good or bad about the Cloak and Dagger series on Freeform other than the drug angle isn't so heavily emphasized. And also, I think their origin and the run, the origin has changed. Their origin has changed, and also the runaway, the aspect of the fact that they're runaways isn't really like a plot point in the show either. So again, I mean, I haven't even watched. Was Daredevil the first Netflix show? I haven't even watched that one yet. So
yeah, the first season of Daredevil.
Yeah, so Daredevil, Punisher, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones, Defenders.
Defenders.
That's all of them? And it's this.
Yeah, so all of them have multiple seasons except for Defenders and Punisher. I think Iron Fist second season comes out in a few months.
But there is going to be a Punisher second season, right?
They haven't announced it.
Oh, I thought
I think they have. No, yeah, they're already shooting it. No, I don't think they've announced it, but Punisher ended up somehow being my favorite, so there better be.
All right, is there anything else we want to say about any of these crossover issues?
It's probably my least favorite reading we've done so far in the Secret Wars.
Yeah.
It's not impressive.
But I got to say, for me, issue 7, and you know, we'll talk about that on our next Secret Wars.
That'll be a close second.
It'll be our next episode next Saturday. Secret. I've already read it.
Me too. At least it's only one book.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I mean, there are a few. Yeah. Exactly. There's only one book.
This time about the episode. This week we had to read four.
And obviously, you know, I had read it previously, but it's one that I hadn't read in a really long time. And upon reading it again, what I remembered about Secret Wars number 7 is it is the low point. From here, it does go back up. Like issue 8 is more enjoyable than 7, and issue 9 is more enjoyable than 8. So
that being said, you should still tune in next week to hear about issue 7.
Oh, you definitely need to tune in to hear about
issue 7. We'll trash it if you want.
And issue 7 ties in with New Mutants 36, Amazing Spider-Man 273, X-Men 202, Defenders 152, Spectacular Spider-Man 111. So there's actually five crossovers. So
five 80s books. That's like 20 new books.
But the Spider-Man issues are pretty good because they both have the Puma in them. So they're actually pretty fun. The New Mutants one is pretty bleh. The X-Men one, it's Chris Claremont. So while good, it's extremely wordy. And I don't think I've ever read that Defenders 152. It's the final issue of the Defenders, that volume of Defenders. So, but they're all those crossovers are better than Secret Wars 2, number 7. It is the low point, both from, in my opinion, an art standpoint and a story standpoint. But, it is necessary.
You can listen to our the torture in our voice when we talk about
exactly.
It.
And you can kind of, when you finish it up, you can kind of understand, like, once Shooter got the Beyonder established through like the first three issues, then you can kind of see, let's have an issue where the Beyonder deals with being in love. Let's have an issue where he deals with emotion. Let's have an issue where he deals with the cosmic beings of the universe. Let's have an issue where he deals with trying to be a hero. This is the one, 7, where he deals with the villain. You know, it's like he had to like dip the Beyonder's toe into each little, you know, different corner of the Marvel universe, so to speak. So not the best story structure. And I don't know. Issue 7 also heavily involves Mephisto, who's never really been a character that I've enjoyed reading about. He's very much a mustache twirler, in my opinion. So that's part of the reason I don't go for it as well. But we're almost done, actually. I mean, in less than a month, we'll be done with Secret Wars 2 and then get on to Secret Wars 3, which is a crossover in some Fantastic Four books. And that's going to be brand new stuff for me. It's going to be stuff I've never read before. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. So. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Next show I'm supposed to be at is Comic-Con Palm Springs, coming up the last weekend in August. I've been talking about that show for a while now, but I've reached out to them several times. I've yet to hear back on any kind of press interviews to be set up and other things that are they're supposed to be getting in touch with me about. So then when I tried to email them, I got email address not valid error, and it's a whole big thing. So I do hope I'll be there, but there's a slight chance I won't. And obviously, as it gets closer, I'll let you know for sure. But I am planning on attending, assuming all things work out in the end. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.